Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 13th of September, recording shortly before the close of Wall Street's trading. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, just have a quick look at what's been happening over the last week. And the more dramatic event that you will certainly recall is that what appeared to be the imminent strike by President Obama against Assad's regime in Syria, or against his military hardware, I should put it that way, has obviously been delayed, and I think it's a potentially lengthy delay of at least a few weeks, and it may not occur in the future at all. I think it would be quite good if it did not occur, in the sense that if we could have a sensible and widely supported process of negotiation that leads to the surrender of all of Syria's chemical weapons. And I think there also needs to be some accountability in terms of all that, but I don't want to spend too much time on that. You'll have your own views, but suffice it to say that that has no longer been a factor weighing on investors' nerves, as it has been earlier this month. Now, the other factor, though, that is perhaps causing a bit of concern, and will no doubt continue to do so in next week, will be the Fed's meeting. It is a two-day meeting which begins on Tuesday. And it's widely expected, it seems, that the Fed will actually commence tapering its quantitative easing program. Now, I think if Mr. Bernanke was to make the decision without any heavy political influence, that he might well hold off, because the U.S. economic recovery, while encouraging, has certainly not been strong enough to meet the targets that he had previously set for reducing QE. And the expectation of a QE tapering move occurring next week is so widespread, and there's been a lot of political pressure for this, that many people now feel that it might actually be a bit of a mistake if it did not occur. Now, what impact is that likely to have on markets? Well, nobody actually knows, because we haven't been here before. But my own feeling and my own guess on this is that the whole topic has been bounced around sufficiently that most of it's been discounted by investors. And I think we saw the sharpest reactions. Well, unquestionably, we saw the sharpest reactions in those ASEAN market reactions. And my guess is that at a somewhat nervous time for markets, that it is unlikely to cause more than a strictly short-term bit of volatility, if that. Now, looking further at the overall background, the rally that we have seen in recent weeks has pushed up valuations again somewhat more. Wall Street is clearly not all that far off its highs for the year. And global GDP growth is still slow. That has weighed on corporate profits somewhat, which have declined a bit in recent quarters. So we have the overall background of generally high valuations and a fair amount of uncertainty that is still out there. And that is conducive, I think, overall to a relatively choppy period in markets, and perhaps a more lengthy period of ranging sideways ranging mainly than we have seen for some time. However, while there have been some major warnings about what will happen when QE ends, they haven't come from Fuller Money. And while I think that there are also some bearish forecasts around following the rises that we've seen in the long-dated government bond yields around the globe, I feel that we do not have the conditions that would lead to anything like a severe bear market, similar to what we saw in the year 2000 and also in the year 2008. Now, will we see minor bear markets over the next few years? Quite possibly, but I don't see any big blowout overall. Now, why? Is that just because I'm a natural optimist? And I don't think so. I would say you go back to 2000 and also 2007-8, and we had a severely over-leveraged global economy, and that existed at a personal household level, and it also was the case in terms of many corporations, and not least the banking sectors. Now, subsequently, that leverage has been considerably reduced for the most part. The flip side of that is that the leverage of the central banks has actually increased as they've taken on that burden. Therefore, it would not be good if we saw another 140 basis point rise in, for instance, US 10-year Treasury bond yields. That's what occurred between May and early September. Very big rise occurring relatively quickly, albeit from a very low level. Now, that's a little bit of a headwind, but I don't think it's a really serious problem. However, if we were to see another 140 basis points to the upside by those bonds over a similar time period, let alone relatively soon, that would certainly cause some problems, in my opinion. However, I think that's less likely, far less likely. But again, we don't know because we haven't been in this same position regarding quantitative easing. But my own view is that the global economy will not be recovering fast enough to drive those long-dated rates up at that kind of speed. And I also think central banks would try to prevent that happening, although it's obviously not entirely in their hands. Now, in terms of the global GDP growth rate, it is certainly modest, but a point I've mentioned on many, many occasions, or made a point I've made on many, many occasions, is that following a severe credit crisis recession, it's about on par. We are just less than 5 years into the recovery period, and noted economists have pointed out that historically it's taken at least 5 to 7 years, and often up to 10 years, for global GDP growth to get back to anything approximating normal following a recession, credit crisis recession of that magnitude. So we're on course. There's also the go back to this issue of quantitative easing and will we actually see tapering. I just want to make the point that when Mr. Bernanke launched the quantitative easing program, there were a lot of critics, and that criticism persisted for quite some time, although we've heard less of it in recent years. I mean, my own view is, and I never sided with the critics in assessing the quantitative easing. Excuse me. And the reason is that what it enabled was a far more orderly deleveraging by banks, by corporations in general, and also by householders than would have occurred otherwise. So let's say the Fed hadn't done anything. Then we would have had a much bigger crash, a much, much sharper recession, in my opinion, a much higher level of unemployment, and actually we would have had a short-term depression if there had been actually no intervention. Now, today, following nearly 5 years down the road, then perhaps global GDP growth would now be a little bit higher because the whole blowout shakeout would have occurred very, very quickly. But I think that the economic costs and particularly the social costs in terms of what that would have done for families around the globe would have been far more devastating without the QE program. Okay, and I've already mentioned that I don't think that markets will collapse as we begin to see a tapering of the quantitative easing program by the U.S. But it may lead to a little bit of additional volatility. And looking further ahead, I think there are many interesting developments on the horizon which cause me to be quite optimistic on a longer term basis. And one of them I'll mention to you is that my lead article here today concerns the very deep strikes that I should, and these are oil discovery efforts that have occurred in the Gulf of Mexico. And the cut to the chase in here, that there is a huge resource there which people did not even know existed until recent years. They were optimistic about it, but they didn't have the technology to get down and test it, and the initial drilling attempts were not rewarding. But the bottom line now is that it looks like there are, according to this article in Bloomberg here today, that there are at least $1.5 trillion in offshore oil in that Gulf of Mexico region. And production is commencing, or has commenced recently, and is going to not be increasing steadily, probably reach its highest level at about the end of this decade, but continue for a very long time thereafter. And this, of course, is due primarily to improved technologies. And technological innovation, an accelerated rate of technological innovation, is the single most important factor behind the optimism that I have mentioned before. But then related to that technological innovation, the other hugely important factor in my longer-term forecast is that we will see lower oil prices in real terms, or at least we certainly have the potential to see that, assuming that people take the measures to develop their own shale properties. That's been a slow process so far, but I do think that it will pick up overall. I know that there are political reasons for not doing that, not to mention our environmental concerns overall, but a point I've often made and won't dwell on, but just repeat it briefly, is that the worst way to treat that environmental problem, in my opinion, would be to throw the whole global economy into a depression by banning the use of fossil fuels, which some people have urged. So the sensible approach: produce the shale oil, and particularly the shale gas, and in my opinion, that will last for decades. And then steadily use technologies to be more responsible in terms of the amount of pollution that we're actually putting into the atmosphere. And also that would mean that we would have more time to actually continue the development of the renewable fuels, particularly solar, which will be increasingly important in future decades, not only future decades, but future centuries. But the point that delights me the most about the fossil fuels in terms of the shale gas and oil properties and some of the offshore discoveries that we're seeing is that you can remember it wasn't all that long ago, pretty much the second half of the last century, when people were very nervous. I think we were all very nervous about really running out of extractable oil reserves, and with the worst fears being that we were going to be left at the mercy of a few dictatorships who controlled these diminishing supplies, and that that would be dire, to put it without going into too much detail, in terms of the global economy. And those fears persisted throughout most of the first decade of this century. Well, I think the reality is that thanks to technology, and our ability to access these additional sources and to be able to discover these additional sources of oil, that Mother Earth remains a cornucopia as far as gas and oil are concerned. And that's fortunate, because to have a strong global economy, not only over the next decade, but over the next 100 years and beyond, although that will do most of us well enough, that we're going to need all sorts of energy sources, the fossil fuels and also the various renewables. So the point I'm to wrap up on that is that technological innovation plus lower energy costs in real, that's adjusted for inflation, will be attractive, and that will set us up for another secular global bull market following this very lengthy corrective phase that we've seen. Now, I've also said previously that I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a few more years of basically sideways ranging activity. But the more important point is that we are in the latter stages of that valuation contraction cycle overall. And of course, valuations have picked up. I mentioned this earlier in my broadcast, but that's largely due to the terrific rally that we saw from November of last year, which carried well into this year through to May, when many stock markets actually peaked. So the sideways ranging activity that I've been talking about would help to correct those overvaluations and create the additional launch pad for that secular bull market, which I think ought to be underway before the end of this decade. And if it is underway, then we'll certainly have clear evidence of it. Now, so that's a really attractive proposition, I think, for most of us. And there are always downsides and there are always risks. We don't want to have any energy spikes here over the next few years, because the balance is still quite tight. And we saw the way oil prices, for instance, pushed up as it looked like we were heading for a strike against the Assad regime. And the global economy obviously doesn't need that. So we need a little luck in terms of avoiding any short-term events that would potentially lead to spikes in energy prices. Then there's another problem, which I've often mentioned, which I think is more serious in social terms, but we're not going to see the rate of job creation that we have seen in other economic recoveries overall. And I think the main reason for that is technological innovation, which is wonderful for consumers. It's even better for businesses, which are able to benefit so much from all that technological innovation. But take any one of those businesses of any of any real size, and there isn't one of them that wouldn't rather have a really good smart machine that can operate around the clock, if desirable, that can do the job that several individuals with holidays and medical costs and all the other paraphernalia that go along with employment, I could not do as effectively. So increasingly, we will see an environment where there are very few jobs that cannot be at least partially replaced by machines. Now, I don't doubt over time that we will see new jobs, or new jobs will open up in areas that people hadn't even thought of previously. But it's the pace. It's the pace with which jobs are being replaced relative to the pace at which new jobs are being created. And I think this is going to be a major social problem for the next many years ahead. And most families will be affected by this in one way or another. Now, moving away from stock markets, what about these long-dated government bonds? Well, this is the early, we're still in the early stages of what is a significant bear market trend. The bull market in long-dated government bonds was, of course, extended for a few years by the quantitative easing programs from the Fed and copied by other central banks in various forms around the world. And there's little doubt in my mind that we've seen the lows for all of these long-dated government bond markets, and that those yields will be rising over the next few years. Hopefully not too quickly, as I mentioned earlier on, but that trend will be higher. So this is not an area that I want to invest in by any means, although I am very, very happy to stay invested in the global autonomies that the corporate global autonomies, of course, that we talk about so much and like so much. But the fixed interest sector, no, I would be very cautious about that. I prefer the corporate bonds to the government bonds, but there are enough shares offering very attractive yields to satisfy me, and I think quite a few of quite a few other investors around the world as well. Now, in terms of currencies overall, we've certainly had some gyrations in recent months, and a somewhat longer period, actually. I think it started when the volatility that we've seen in currencies this year really started when Japan moved overtly to weaken its way too strong currency towards the end of last year. And that really rang alarm bells in other parts of Asia, as we've seen, not least in the ASEAN economies. And we've seen some sharp drops in their currency rates, but they had had some of the stronger currencies up until Japan began to devalue its own currency. And also, it's been encouraging to see. And in recent weeks, we've seen some of those ASEAN currencies firm somewhat. We've also seen the Indian rupee firm. And I think that we're likely to get back to, for the most part, for most nations, a period where currencies are mostly ranging within bands that are not going to create too much difficulty or chaos. The bottom line is that no country is going to want a strong currency in this highly competitive environment of globalization. And inevitably, there will always be individual countries where, due to governance problems, we see situations where currencies can be considerably weakened. But those are the sort of the one-off exceptions, and I don't think that will be taking place in terms of any of the larger nations overall. And Owens, in my longer-term view, is that the U.S. dollar is in a base-building stage overall, and that as the leader of the technological innovation and as the major, at least initial, beneficiary of low energy prices, that the U.S. dollar will see a somewhat firmer trend, particularly when the U.S. economy generally is stronger. And I think that in other words, 5 years from now, would I expect the dollar to be stronger relative to most other currencies than it is today? The short answer is yes. I think that's quite likely to be the case. But the point I want to make in terms of the near to lengthy medium term, in other words, the next few years, I think we will see more often than not a ranging environment without too many dramatic events to cause bigger moves and with adverse consequences among the currency markets. Now, looking at the commodity markets, we're in an interesting situation here right now in terms of precious metals. I wrote about these yesterday and also talked about them yesterday in the audio. But my feeling is that they're getting more interesting, particularly gold and silver, as they have been retreating following the significant and in many senses downward trend ending rallies that we have seen over the last few months. Now, that hypothesis, downward trend ending hypothesis at any rate, is about to be tested here by events over the next few months. My hunch is, though, that we will see we will see gold and silver and platinum and palladium holding above the lows that they had actually seen earlier in the year. Just going to put up the put up a chart of gold while I talk about this. It was really at the end of June that we saw the lows, and as I just refresh my memory on that price, gold got down to $1,180 and change on the 28th of June, and then rallied all the way up to about $1,435, and we nearly tested 1,300 earlier today. Gold's actually up a little bit here today, but we had that big downward dynamic yesterday, which I said looked to be at least the beginning of a climactic stage here overall, and these precious metals are, well, gold and silver and platinum at any rate, are oversold on the stochastics basis. I also posted those charts yesterday, and you can see them anytime in the library. Now, we have Goldman Sachs saying that this bearish phase in precious metals is going to carry well into 2014. I'm not so sure of that, but I will give the benefit of the doubt to a base building, ranging base building extension phase, right hand extension phase, above the lows that we have seen for gold and silver over the next few months. And if so, that will set us up for another more significant and medium-term recovery for the precious metal sectors. But Goldman Sachs doesn't think that's going to happen. They think that we'll see those end of June lows taken out and another significant decline. If they're right, that will create an even more interesting longer-term opportunity for those of you who like to have a reasonable investment in that precious metals sector. But right now, I'm continuing to just to happily watch to see which way this actually plays out. And in terms of a firmer tone here overall, we'll need to see some upward dynamics above those lows at the end of June to support my hypothesis. So we will see. In terms of other commodities, the energy sector here, this is still, I talked about this on a longer term basis, but on a short term basis, today's oil prices are a bit of a headwind. Today, for instance, we've got the WTI, which is the less important one, at 108.5. And the Brent is just under the $112 level. I'll feel far better about it, or more importantly, it'll be far better for the global economy when we see these back below the $100 level. But I think there's too much unrest and uncertainty in terms of what's going on in the Middle East for that to happen. Happen quickly right now. And the longer term story, of course, will be additional tapping of those sources of shale oil and gas in many individual countries. But depending on when that actually starts or the speed with which that development proceeds, It's going to vary considerably from one country to another, but that's the big factor that will keep or will help to lower energy prices over the medium to longer term. There's a lot of interest among subscribers in the industrial metals sector. Global GDP growth isn't strong enough right now to lift these prices significantly, especially as China's economy has slowed down. I don't think it's still slowing down. I'm more optimistic about China in terms of its recovery scope, but certainly the emphasis on China's growth is changing somewhat. I don't think we will see China importing metals with the same ravenous appetite that we did a few years ago. But nevertheless, China's demand, and I think global demand as the global economy picks up, will be quite strong for these metals. But in the short term, to get prices higher, producers are going to have to cut back on supplies. And we've seen that happen with tin, and that's the only one that's continuing to rally. here right now, and I think that other producers are not feeling compelled here at this stage to start reducing supplies. But it's always a combination. When prices are low, you get increased consumption as the global economy improves, and you also get somewhat reduced production. And conversely, when prices of metals are extremely high, you get increased production and you get a drop in consumption. And right now, we need to see some diminution in the actual supply of these metals to make sure that we have a floor under prices and to lift them over the medium term in terms of the next year or two overall. Looking at agricultural commodities, the good news for the most part so far in terms of staple grains is that the growing conditions have been more favorable in 2013 than we have seen for the previous 5 years. And so that's a good development. And I think that that also means that inflationary pressures are going to remain under control in most economies, and certainly in the developed economies. And on that note, I think I should close this, not to hold on to you for too long. And meanwhile, have a terrific weekend. All the best.